So what do you think about Timothy Chalamet as Bob Dylan? What's your thoughts?
I like it. I'm not a big fan of his acting, except for Call Me By Your Name.
He was perfect in Call Me By Your Name. Are you talking about how you felt about his acting when he played the kid who had the meth problem, the Steve Carell film? What was that called? Beautiful Boy. Was that?
Actually, he was good in that, but I'm talking more Will Women, and there's another film of his where it felt like he wasn't acting, but he was just basically playing himself.
Okay.
I forgot what it was, but no, of course, Call Me By Your Name is a great performance.
I think it's going to be rough for him, at least it's certainly going to be rough for me. When he comes out in Dune, I'm going to have a really rough time with that film because I had such a terrible time with the Kyle MacLachlan version way back in 84? 84, something like that. I'm not looking forward to that. Are you a fan of the book? Did you ever read it?
Okay, so there's a bit of a backstory when it comes to Dune and myself. I've known Denis Villeneuve since Anson D, which was 2009, because we both were in Montreal in the film scene here.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah.
Anson D is okay. I wasn't in love with it, but anyway. So you're a fan. You're a friend. Okay.
Yeah, and he's always been obsessed with Dune. I mean, that's mm-hmm. the movie that he is the dream project of his, that he always wanted to make. That and surprisingly. The Blade Runner sequel, which he finally got made a few years ago.
And I presume he feels that David Lynch totally fucked up the 1984, or what did he think about that?
Oh, yeah. He thinks it's unwatchable.
Okay.
So this is going to be a very different adaptation. And in fact, he might split it into two movies.
I think I read that early on, right? That they hadn't really announced it, but that how could they possibly make one movie, given that he intended to be fairly faithful to the Frank Herbert book, right?
Right. He wants to be very faithful to Herbert's novel and vision, and that's the main idea behind him making this movie, because he felt like David Lynch didn't really capture Herbert's vision properly.
Yeah.
So we'll wait and see. I'm gonna wait and see how this one turns out. I'm not a big fan of his American movies as much as I am his French Canadian movies.
Okay, all right.
I thought there was a lot to admire in Sicario and Blade Runner and Prisoners, but
you know, I gotta say that since we have both seen the Woody Allen film online, yeah. I thought that I was really pleased with how. Basically, Chalamet was doing what all actors who've been hired to be in a Woody Allen film, they are basically submitting to that world where every locale, every scene, everything is about, sophisticated New Yorkers enjoying the lush lifestyle and the cruising around. I thought it was great. I liked hanging with him. I mean, he was not trying to wink at the audience and tell them, "Don't worry, guys, I don't really believe in this." He gave into it. It was good. I thought it was a good job, you know.
Yeah, I forgot about the Woody Allen movie. He was good in that one.
Yeah.
The movie was actually fairly delightful. It's still minor Woody Allen, but
mm-hmm.
I like how it also took place basically in the span of a day.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't think Woody's done that much in his career, if ever.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's a very enjoyable movie, and I do wonder how this movie set in San Sebastian, Spain, is gonna turn out.
You know something about that?
Not much. All I know is that a big chunk of it takes place at the San Sebastian Film Festival.
Okay. All right, so it's basically people that Woody knows, people who are at a film festival with this, that, and the other thing. People fall in love, fall out of love, usual stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And I mean, I don't know if Ken would take it. I don't even know if he's not welcome there anymore. Samuel hasn't really said anything.
Yeah, he's if Terry Fromo and the people at if they had the cojones that they have shown, I think that they would recognize that most of the world out there, not just yourself and myself and a few other people that I could mention, nobody is adamantly bought into the they're all skeptical of the Pharaoh position. And no one really buys into it, and everybody knows there's something wrong with it, and so they basically kind of dropped it. Now, I think that Timothy Chalamet still has it around his neck, and I think that I don't know what he could do at this point, but I think it was a really bad move on his part. Ditto Greta Gerwig, but it's over, so don't obsess on it, I guess.
Yeah, I already forgot that they threw Woody Allen under the bus.
Yeah.
But that was a big deal for me. I know it was a big deal for you.
Yeah.
It was in the middle of the thick of the Me Too hysteria.
Yeah.
2016, 2017, right? More 2017, because Chalamet and Gerwig had Lady Bird.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yeah, and they just threw him under the bus. Many people think they did that just to improve their Oscar chances, but I don't really think that's the Oscar chances.
Okay. All right.
You
don't happen to know, did you ever watch Ugly Betty, by the way?
Ugly Betty? Yeah, I saw an episode or two. It was good. It was fine. Whatever.
The creator of that show, the guy who, I guess, came up with it, his name is Silvio Horta, Horta, Latino writer, director, whatever, shot himself. He's dead, 45 years old.
What?
Yeah.
Wow. This just happened?
It just came up in Variety 20 seconds ago.
I know.
45 years old,
Did he do anything post Ugly Betty?
That is a question. Ugly Betty dates back to, it's a while ago, like 14 years ago. No, I do not. Let me see. I'm just looking at his TV credits. The Chronicle, I don't know that. Jake 2.0. So I guess he had his hand in there. Anyway, listen, we're doing the same thing we always do, which is we digress.
I know.
We talk about everything, and before you know it, it's an hour and a half. So let's stick to, briefly, what was your take on why the Golden Globe HFPA membership totally blew off The Irishman? Is The Irishman finished because they didn't like it enough? What happened with The Irishman and the Golden Globes? What's your take?
It's funny. I was walking on my way home today, and I was thinking what we're going to talk about in terms of BGA, PGA, and Globes.
Yeah.
I came to the conclusion. I think The Irishman is finished.
Okay.
I don't think it's gonna win.
And that is because.
Well, there's three things going against it right now, and three very very. Big things. One is the Netflix bias, which it seems as though industry voters are not letting go. Look, Marriage Story as well. Baumbach got snubbed for director today.
Yep, that's right.
From the DGA.
Yep. That was very strange that he didn't get it and. Wait a minute, did Todd Phillips make it, or did he get snubbed also?
Todd Phillips got snubbed. And you know what?
Yeah.
People are saying that Taika Waititi took Greta Gerwig's slot. I actually think Waititi took Todd Phillips' slot.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
I find Phillips has been getting more accolades and more... More acclaim for Joker than at least within the industry than Gerwig and Little Women, which has become basically a social media movement more than a But so Scorsese's Irishman, I think it's finished because A, Netflix problem. B, it's 3.5 hours. Attention spans have changed. And I even wrote, tweeted that the way to watch it is in one sitting. And one of the more problematic trends that I've noticed surrounding The Irishman is that people are watching it in two sittings, three sittings, four sittings. That's just not the way to do it. If you want the overall impact to really, really hit you,
yeah,
you need to watch it in one full sitting.
At the very least, two sittings. I mean, I could see someone breaking it in half, but when you, if you start with a movie, part two, just call it part two, that starts with the It's Summer scene down in Miami and goes all the way in, that's when it really kicks into gear. That's when the film really starts to feel like it's really got its hand on something. And in other words, the fall, the gradual fall of Jimmy Hoffa, the killing of Jimmy Hoffa, the onrush of time and age and how everything falls apart. I mean, I think it's one of the most, for someone to watch that film and say, well, gee, I don't know, it was all right, you know, not so, I don't, you know, there's nothing to say. There's nothing to, what do you say in response to somebody who doesn't get that it's really an expert, beautifully measured, profound, sad, you know, climax to the whole Scorsese climax, gangster thing. I just don't know what to say to people. And you're saying, well, they're bored by it. Well, that's just not a very perceptive or astute way of processing movies.
Well, this leads me to my third reason why The Irishman is not being honored more, and it's the fact that basically a lot of people are calling it slow.
Okay.
I mean, I'm sure you've read it and seen it on social media. There's people out there that expected Goodfellas and Casino and Wolf of Wall Street, but they got they basically got silence.
Uh huh.
And that is rubbing people the wrong way. And I mean, Jeff, you have to understand. Obviously, there's how many voters in the Academy? 6,000, 7,000?
Yeah, uh-huh.
I mean, a lot of them are not privy to, you know, art house cinema. They are what you would call Joe and Jane popcorn, right?
Yeah, well, we're talking about the new Academy kids who are notoriously or famously into celebrating, if the situation warrants, genre films. They're not as much into art house stuff as they are genre stuff. They like movies that kind of, you know, pay off in a kind of entertaining genre way. They certainly have no prejudices against genre. And what you're saying is, in addition to that, they may be a little tone deaf to film that is a little more on the artful side.
Well, yeah, but it's not just the Academy, the new little kids. It's also the people that voted for Green Book. The people that voted for Argo, Joe and Jane popcorn, as you call them. I mean, you know, not everyone in the Academy is a hotshot producer or a hotshot. A lot of them are just regular movie fans who happen to have producing credits or acting credit here and there. And so The Irishman is art house to them, and they. You know, art house isn't for everyone.
But it's not really art house. It's just a good, solid movie that there's always a story going on. There's always something at stake. There's always some kind of character element that's being examined or deepened.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not something that's kind of like just meditatively lying there like a, you know, there are many films that you and I have seen that would warrant... the label of, come on, do something. Don't just sit there and bore us. It's not doing that. It's a good, it's got tight for cinematography, those two shots and good editing. I mean, just, it's very disciplined, I don't know what to say. This is ridiculous. But all right, if it's over, it's over. So what's going to win? What's going to happen? It's going to be Once Upon a Time.
Before I get into what's point, I just have to say one final thing. The problem is still the fact that the Irishman, it does not play like The Wolf of Wall Street or The Departed or Goodfellas or Casino. It's a very different movie than those more, highly stylized violence.
Yeah. Exuberant. You have to call The Wolf of Wall Street, for the wrong reasons, is an exuberant film, even though it's supposed to be a critique, but it's exuberant. It's a high. It's something to have fun with.
Right, and yeah. It was 3 hours.
Yeah.
So, anyway, the Irishman moves a little slower, even though it is still very entertaining.
Yeah.
And I mean, we both agree it's a masterpiece, right? Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah.
But mainstream voters are just not appreciating it as much as critics are, and cinephiles. And I think that's one of the bigger problems for the Irishman.
Mm. Okay. So we got. So what's going to happen? What's going to win? Is it going to be Once Upon a Time or 1917? What do you see as the strong and the weak points? I think that Once Upon a Time is more widely liked across the board, just because it's a movie-ish element everybody's comfortable with. I can sense disappointment in your tone of voice. So I think it would be a diminished thing if it wins, not because I don't like it, but I just don't think it's a great film. It's a good film. It's an engaging film. But it's not a great film.
The way you're talking about Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is, I think, the way a lot of people see this movie. They really enjoyed it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the drama of Parasite in 1917 is going to hit voters much harder.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now, I really think that 1917 and Parasite are number one and number two.
Okay.
And Hollywood is three.
Okay.
And also we have to point out that 1917 hasn't really been released wide yet. It's finally going to be released to the mainstream this Friday.
Yes, I understand that. It is only just opening, but the screeners have been out, at least they came to me, late November, early December, or something like that, around the, pretty quickly after it first showed. I think this first screenings, November 27th, 28th, something like that? Something, anyway, it's been a while. It's not, theatrical is not the, go ahead.
Right, but I do think buzz will build around it from mainstream audiences once it gets released. I actually am expecting good numbers at the box office in 1917.
Mm-hmm.
And as for Parasite, I know you're not a believer of it potentially winning Best Picture, but I think it has a chance.
You mean Best Picture plus Best International Film? Two Oscars, yes. Right?
Two Oscars. I'm not ready to say, to predict Best Director as well, but Parasite has become a phenomenon.
But most people that are voting, they're all voting, they're going to say, let me see, I love this film so much, I've got to give it to the best. I give it one Oscar for Best International Film, because it's the best one, in my opinion. Got to give it Best Picture also. It's the greatest thing since sliced bread. Got to give it to Bong Joon-ho. He's wonderful. He's the new Orson Welles. So that's three Oscars. Is there anything else we can give? I just don't understand where the joy and the wonder and the rapture comes from. Why does it have to be on this level? Why can't it be excellent film, best Bong Joon-ho? Didn't agree with the plotting, but I understand what other people don't care. There's a lot of films that don't have plotting that makes sense.
Yeah, it seems to have hit people on a very personal and emotional level.
Personal level?
Well, the upstairs, downstairs dramatics of the movie. Class divide.
Yes, it was so daring, wasn't it? It actually accused and gave us a portrait of a totally unfair society in which a relatively narrow slice of the populace lives in wonderful, abundant splendor, and everybody else kind of struggling to get decent Wi-Fi in their crappy little apartments. Boy, what a bold statement that was, you know.
I mean, you know, like every other movie he has released, it does play like a cartoon. But the thing is, you and I both agree. I mean, it was in the lower tier of our top 10 list, if it even made your top 10 list. It was like, now it's like number 9 or 10 for me.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems to have struck a nerve. Audiences are really, really loving this movie, and we can't deny that. Is it going to win Best Picture? I still think 1917 is the front runner right now, especially after that Golden Globe win.
I talked to a couple of people. I went to two interesting parties last weekend, and I heard from some folks, and I'm not the only person who feels that the absurd plotting in the second half of Parasite is a real problem. I mean, there's some people I understand that don't care, and that's okay. But I'm not the only person. I think that's going to be a factor. I mean, I don't know what the thing is. Why do people feel this need to want to, why are they so taken with this thing? It's just, there is a difference. I mean, you know, wake up. We're not 7 years old. I mean, there's a difference between very well-crafted, admirable, no question, you know, one of the best of the year. But to make it put it on the top of the mountain and enter the title Parasite into history and give it 2 Oscars, it's crazy. I mean, do you talk to anybody who feels this way? Or am I the... What's going on here?
You also have to look at the bigger picture, and it's that during the last decade, genre cinema has basically has been legitimized by younger critics.
Yes.
To the point where now even the highbrows are calling films like Get Out and Parasite the best of the year. It happened overnight, but even a movie like Shape of Water winning Best Picture, never in a million years, if you would have asked me in the 90s, I would win Best Picture.
Mm.
It's all part of the genre cinema movement that's happening right now, and I think the problem with Parasite, and you really nailed it, is the fact that in the last 15-20 minutes, all hell breaks loose, and it just whatever subtleties it had, and I don't really think it has that many subtleties to begin with. They're thrown out of the window, and it just becomes a visceral violent revenge. And that irked me a bit when I saw it at Cannes, and again when I saw it for a second time here at home.
Mm.
That is the major flaw of the movies. It just can't stick a landing.
So what's your event-wise, what are we looking at in the... By the way, what do you feel was fair or we mentioned the DGA, which just was announced earlier today. Do you feel that... Why do you think that the Taika Waititi nomination happened? I wasn't under the impression that he was, that his film, that Jojo Rabbit, was regarded as one of the top 5. I thought it was, you know, a lot of people like it, obviously, but it's more of a, you know, 6th or 7th or 8th on the list, one of those, you know? Where did this come from? That was kind of a surprise. I mean, I thought, like we said, Todd Phillips, maybe, more than him.
I'm going to stick with Phillips as my number 5 for Oscar nominations. But like right now we have a top 4 that's set in stone and nothing can break it, right? We have Scorsese, Bong, Tarantino, and Mendes.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And the fifth and final slot is up for grabs, as far as I'm concerned. But you live around in the thick of the industry world. JoJo is well liked, isn't it?
Well, I guess. I mean, not to anybody I talk to, but, you know, I'll take your word for it. I really don't go up to people and say, hey, I just had the greatest time rewatching Jojo Rabbit. What'd you think? And nobody's even mentions it. It's like, you know,
It's definitely a movie that has people talking, just purely based on the subject matter.
Right now, what has people talking? Is that what you're asking me?
That it's a comedy starring a little wannabe Nazi child who hates Jews.
Yeah.
He's the hero, by the way.
Yeah.
He hates Jews,
he doesn't hate Jews. He's just a little mild little milquetoast kid who doesn't have a lot of strong feelings, and he's just parroting what he's been told. That's it. He doesn't hate them. He's not an anti-Semite. I didn't even know what anti-Semitism
is.
You're
right.
It's silly.
But he wants to be a Nazi when he grows up.
Yeah.
I mean, he wants to be an SS commander or whatnot. And that kind of story does turn heads, and it does get people talking. And that's why it's somewhat successful at the box office.
Did you ever see an old William Holden film called The Counterfeit Traitor? It's not a great film, but it's a good sort of workmanlike thing. Anyway, he plays a Swiss businessman who decides to become a kind of a double agent, reporting and feeding data to the Allies in his dealings with Nazi Germany, because he would sell steel and go, you know, have a lot of good business with them. So anyway, that's more or less. There's a brief period towards the... definitely the third act, and he runs into the son of a German ally of his, a reasonable son, and the son is an absolutely devoted Hitler Youth kid with very thick glasses, and he's got the tan shirt on and the Nazi armband and everything else. It's fascinating, because whatever else you might think about this kid, you believe him. He's a devotee. He's not maybe not the smartest kid. Maybe he is, I don't know. But he's really into it. He really believes, and he's absolutely tethered to the idea of loyalty to the National Socialist Party. And that kid is completely the real thing. And if that somebody like that had played Jojo Rabbit, a kid who really believes, he's bought into it, hook, line, and sinker, then it would mean something. But this kid, he does not radiate a conviction. He's just like, oh, well, okay, oh, this is, you know, whatever, you know, I'll raise my hand in the Nazi salute. I don't feel any conviction from him at all. I don't think that Taika Waititi tried to instill conviction. He was more into the tonal kind of wink-wink humor of the film all the way along, and that was my feeling. It wasn't the real deal. I didn't believe it.
I mean, if we're talking about the movie itself, and we disregard the whole hoopla going on about, oh, it's an anti-hate satire about a little boy who wants to be a Nazi, it's really such a simple story, but still with sentimental cliches. And if there was an actual decent story to it, then maybe I would be praising Jojo Rabbit right now. But I just found the whole thing very familiar, from, you know, the Jewish girl being hidden beneath the walls, and the transformation that happened to Jojo, which is so obvious. You obviously know what's going to happen. Beat by beat, it's just a very familiar movie, and that's, I think, one thing that a lot of people are just not talking about. The fact that, yeah, underneath that over stylized facade of, hey, you know, it's a rather shocking premise.
Yeah.
The story doesn't really give you anything new.
I didn't believe Scarlett Johansson. I didn't believe Sam Rockwell, although Sam Rockwell was by far the best guy in it. And I also love that little chubby kid who was his friend. He really had a good attitude. I've forgotten his name now, but he was a very, very clever, very likable little kid.
Yeah, his sidekick. He was very good. I don't remember his name either.
Yeah.
But you're right, ScarJo was somewhat miscast. Even though she got a nomination today at the BAFTAs.
Good for her. Good for her.
She actually got two nominations for Marriage Story and for...
They threw in the Jojo Rabbit thing also, right? I mean, she got two separate nominations?
Yeah. So did,
two nominations. Okay.
So did Margot Robbie for Bombshell and Hollywood. And that was part of the reason why BAFTA So White was trending this morning. There was no person of color nominated today in the four main acting categories. Is this a preview of the Oscars? I have no idea. Because even J-Lo was snubbed for her Hustlers performance.
Yeah.
So, I mean, today was a big day. BAFTA, EGA, PGA.
Hmm.
Anything surprise you with the PGA nods?
No, neither the PGA nor BAFTA nor DGA. Nothing surprised me. The only thing that I was, except for, as we've already discussed, the Taika Waititi nomination from the DGA, that's the only thing that took me aback. I thought that the DGA might want to just... the gesture of nominating Greta Gerwig just to kind of make peace with that sector of the community that is, you know, obviously peeved and impatient and irked that her film hasn't been respected more, as you know, particularly since it's connecting commercially and probably will reach maybe $100 million. It's a hit movie. So you think that they'd want to maybe just to kind of, we hear you, we respect what you're saying, and just do that, you know?
I would love to see the numbers, at least gender-wise, of the people that bought a ticket to Little Women. I mean, how is it overwhelmingly a female audience? That's what interests me right now.
Well, I can guarantee you it's not overwhelmingly a male audience. I mean, you know, it's probably a certain percentage of guys are being dragged. Some people with open minds and engaging intellects are going on their own. But it's, you know, it's probably 70-30, you know, in favor of women, or maybe 80-20. Who knows?
You know? I spoke to a guy at the gym today, and I asked him if he was... And he's a cinephile. He's a hardcore cinephile. I asked him if he's interested in Little Women. He's like, why would I go watch a movie called Little Women?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I mean, I think that's the main attitude a lot of male audiences have towards this movie.
Yeah.
But I mean, I gave it a shot. I was still very excited to see it because I loved Lady Bird, and the cast is very good. But
yeah,
I mean, it just felt very familiar.
Yeah.
Obviously, this being the ninth or tenth film adaptation of Alcott's novel. But I don't even think The Woman is going to get a Best Picture nomination.
Probably not.
Oh well.
And I was thinking, by the way, that I hope that I can engage you and get some Sundance reactions, that I can, you know, copy your World of Real stuff and whatever else you're filing, and getting summarized. Maybe we can do a quick daily thing if you have the time, or you can figure it out up in Park City. I mean.
I don't know if daily is necessary for Park City, because I mean on a day-to-day basis, it's pretty uneventful, but maybe like every few days we can do
yeah.
it, because it's sometimes isn't what it used to be, in that, like, it
makes... By the sea, that, I don't think that kind of stuff is going to happen anymore.
Yeah. Actually, I told my editor at the Playlist, from time to time I help out Rodrigo.
Yeah.
He's a good guy.
Yeah.
I told him I'll review Uncle Frank, I'll review Four Good Days. Those are two movies that could be good.
Yeah.
And the Lance Armstrong documentary, I think it's 200 minutes.
Why do you think that people feel a need for another Lance Armstrong documentary?
Well, I don't know. Mm. Hopefully this is just the final and definitive statement on Lance Armstrong.
Mm-hmm.
But it's an HBO documentary, and HBO's usually pretty good with these long, epic, sprawling takes on celebrity. Yeah. So who knows?
Mm.
I think it's an HBO documentary.
I'm kind of I'm just reading here, incidentally, and I know we're going to do a 15 to 20 minute thing, and here we are at the 40 minute mark. So let's.
It's good. It's good. We spoke about the PGA and PGA stuff.
Yeah, that was really something.
I can't think of another movie about drones that was as good.
Hey, by the way, there's been a brand new horror film with Kristen Stewart that was just screened on Monday night, and I missed it. And I was kind of angry that I didn't go. Did you happen to go or see it or hear anything?
No, I missed it too.
Okay.
Underwater.
All right.
I'm always cautious when it comes to January releases.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a time of the year where studios dump and truth be told, I hadn't heard of Underwater until like a week ago. I didn't even know it existed. So who knows how long this movie's been in the can.
And there's a Bad Boys Will Smith movie, which I'm sure is junk. And there's one other one that I RSVP to.
There's not much,
yeah.
I think Black Widow is supposed to come out in the next month or so, no?
Oh, okay. All right, the ScarJo thing, right?
Which, I'm looking forward to that one, because I hear it's not really a superhero movie. It's more of a spy movie.
Oh, okay. Good.
So I'm very excited for it. And, but other than that, I don't think there's going to be anything to look forward to.
Yeah. Well, let's congratulate each other on talking for a mere 45 minutes, as opposed to 90 minutes. And we're making progress, and our goal is to talk about one topic only and do it in 10 minutes or 12 minutes. We failed, but okay, that's fine, because we're learning the discipline of how to do this. So in that spirit,